the Taylor case, and Ms. Martin, given the order of arrival, I suspect that the court could take judicial notice that you must be the safest driver among the community.
I was trying really hard not to speed too fast.
Well, we're glad you're safely here. All right, John Richard Taylor versus the Commonwealth. We're ready when you are, sir.
Thank you, Judge. Good afternoon, Jay. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for a vote, please.
3 minutes, yes, sir.
Thank you for allowing me to speak before you today. This is the case of John Richard Taylor. Mr. Taylor was convicted in a bench trial on March 18th of 2014 in the city of Nauvoo. Factually, the...
And just so this shows up in the recorded version, you're Stephen Merman.
Thank you, Stephen Merman.
Thank you.
Second time before, Your Honor.
Yes, sir.
The appellant's fiance in this case actually agreed to watch her friend's two children in appellant's home while their mother was out of town. The victim in this case was 13 years of age. She testified at trial that on 3 occasions the appellant had sexual intercourse with her. The trial court then found the appellant guilty of 2 counts of carnal knowledge and 1 count of indecent liberties while in a custodial or supervisory relationship. The appeal that brings us together today challenged the findings that the appellant maintained a custodial or supervisory relationship over the victim as required under 18.2.370.1.
At the time of the incidents, he was the only adult there, right?
The record would so reflect that, Your Honor, but I don't actually know based on the questioning by the Commonwealth's attorney. Specifically, I'll bring out the worst first. In that regard, I didn't try this case. I'll make that clear. The defendant, appellant, did in fact take the witness stand, and during cross-examination, was asked by the Commonwealth's attorney, appears in appendix page 153, and you were left caring for Caitlin Broadhurst at least during some of that time. And defendant answered, some of that time, period, it was split between me, my mother, and China, who was a woman who was staying in the home. So the question was asked, we don't know from the defendant whether or not, in fact, he was alone with the child. However, there was some testimony by an investigator indicating that there was no child in the home at that particular time. The issue then jumps out at me as whether or not it could have been actually after the incident that he was a custodial individual. I mean, that's really what the meat and potatoes of this case is all about. We'll get right to it. The cases are clear. Some of them tilt one way or another, but they all boil down to whether or not he was exercising control over the juvenile child.
And that's a factual determination, correct?
It would have to be, I believe, Your Honor.
And how is
the judge in this case made that?
And how is Judge Doyle's reasoning and rationale behind that not persuasive?
Well, I can't say that it's not persuasive, but I can say that I don't necessarily agree with it. I'd like to raise that before Your Honors today. He basically called him a babysitter at the time. But if we look at whether or not somebody has a custodial relationship over a child, what does it take to be the custodial adult in that scenario? Can the custodial adult just walk out of the house and whoever's left over the age of 18 become that by default? Well, we don't know in this case whether that's what happened or whether he was actually left as the custodial adult. In other words, the issue that I've discovered in all of the cases, there's sort of a common denominator. It's, did he accept that position? Was he appointed that position? Did he get that position of custodial adult or parent or custodian, if you will, simply because he's over 18 and there are minors in the house and maybe there are no other adults in the house? Well, that to me raises the issue of, well, if a babysitter is babysitting the children and decides to walk out the door with her boyfriend, is there no custodial adult there? Is there nobody in charge of the children? Well, what if the boyfriend comes back in and the girlfriend goes to 7-Eleven? Does he then, by default, become the custodial adult?
Wasn't there a testimony from the fiancé, and vague on this recollection, to the effect that she was leaving him in charge?
The, what she said, the only recollection that I have in that regard is the defendant himself saying that it was split between me, my mother, and China. And perhaps Ms. Martin has more specific information in that regard.
And he admitted that at times he was left caring?
He admitted only that, quote, during some of that time, the Commonwealth asked, and you were left caring for Caitlin Broadhurst at least during some of that time? And his response was, during some of that time. Now, prior to that specific question, the issue was, at what period of time was the victim in the home? And it was over a period of just a few days in the end of February. So the record isn't clear exactly when. What period of time was he, the person in charge, if you will, of that child? Was it the time when the assault occurred? Was it sometime after the assault occurred? Well, we just don't know. We don't know how often he was left alone with the child. And we don't know, even from this record, whether or not he was truly alone at that time with the child.
Did he also admit that the child care was split between the three adults living at the home?
His specific words would indicate that, Your Honor, yes. He indicated that it was split between, his words, it was split between me, my mother, and China. It was split. And the question preceding that, and you were left caring for Caitlin Broadhurst at least during some of that time. It was split between me, my mother, and China during some of that time.
So recognizing that that admission was made by the defendant, though the record is silent as to specifically which days and which times that was the case, cannot a reasonable inference be drawn that if he was the only adult left there at the house with the minor or minors, that that was one of those times where he was left caring for the kids?
I think it's a fair inference to reach if you're not willing to consider, we don't know when the custody arrangement or that arrangement was actually split. Perhaps it was after the date of this event, sometime during the period of time that she was there. Perhaps the child was left in his care without any understanding of who was in charge of the children, but then after that particular day, it was split between me, my mother, and China. The record is silent.
Well, when the defendant makes that general acknowledgement that he was responsible and left in charge at times and that care was split equally between, or split somehow between the adults living at the home, does that not then become trial counsel's responsibility to make sure that you ferret out whether or not that care included the times alleged in the indictments?
I think that's fair, or the Commonwealth certainly could have honed in on that specific issue to preserve the record, which wasn't done. But I think that the court's inference is a fair one, unfortunately. So I guess looking at the cases, and the government, the Commonwealth has cited the cases similar to the ones that I've cited, the common denominator is whether or not care and control is being exercised over the child by the defendant or by the appellant. The cases speak clearly to some sort of relationship prior to the event taking place. In Lennon, the appellant was a teacher. In Sadler, it was a coach. I mean, there's always, in these cases, there's some sort of relationship that gets the victim in contact with the defendant or appellant. In Duda, it was a school security officer. All of these things where the victim would have some sort of responsibility to listen to or abide by the direction of the individual who harmed them. In Crampin, the victim was receiving a ride to and from church from the individual who assaulted her. Kolesnikoff, this was just a family friend, long-standing relationship, but the defendant in that case actually exercised some sort of control by telling the kids, hey, turn off the TV, turn off the video game. So there was some sort of control going on. Interestingly, in the Taylor case before this court, we don't have any information about whether or not any control existed, other than it was Taylor's home. By default, he was there when the actual person who was supposed to be watching the child wasn't, because that person had to work. So Taylor is left at home. There's not been any discussion in the record about what he did to exercise that control. Nothing in the record shows that he assumed the responsibility for these children, with the exception of that statement that he made on the stand. It was split between 1, 2, and 3. And again, factually looking at the timeline, there's just no way for us to know when that statement was made. And for that reason, I'd ask the court to give that the weight that it rightly deserves, which is less than perhaps it's getting.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Thank you. Ms. Martin?
May it please the court, Kathleen Martin for the Commonwealth. In this case, we have to keep in mind that the trial court said that he found the victim to be a credible witness, totally credible. He rejected the defendant's testimony. And the court then said that he believed that all of these incidents happened just as this little girl said. And she said, with regard to the issue that we're here, the conviction we're here on, that when the defendant had sex with her on the floor of the living room at night, the other children were sleeping, they were all younger, and that the China, who was the engaged to the defendant then, and his mother were not at home at that time. So that it was the defendant, and it was the other sleeping younger children, and it was the little girl, the victim. And the trial court believed everything that she said in terms of the way she described it. So the
she didn't describe a custodial relationship, though, did she?
Well, no, she didn't. She didn't describe a custodial relationship, but she did say, you know, that she was the only person, the only child in the home with the defendant. There were no other adults in the home. So then we have the defendant saying to the police investigator on page 72 and 73 and 89 of the appendix that he had been alone with her when they had sex. He said that the care was split between his mother, his girlfriend, and himself, and his girlfriend, who was referred to as China in the record, but her name was actually Maria something, said that she worked at night and she left the children, all of the children, his own children, the younger sister, and the victim, in Taylor's care because he was there at the residence during that time. Well, the common sense inference from there is that he was in charge of the children, he was in charge of this little girl, he was responsible for her well-being at that point, and therefore the custodial relationship has been established. If you look at the cases which we've cited, you know, the Cramden case, for example, where the defendant simply transported the child victim to and from church. You know, he just picked up the child, took him to church, brought him home. Gouda, the defendant was a school security officer. He issued hall passes and issued a hall pass to the victim. The Kolesnikov case, where the victim was the friend of the defendant's son, and he was just spending the night with his friend in the defendant's home. And so certainly, that's kind of the same sort of situation here, that when the defendant was alone with his child, he was responsible for her care. And that was the basis for the trial courts acquitting the defendant of the two other offenses, similar offenses. The court didn't have any doubt that they happened, but said, well, those were in the daytime. And given this child's age, she was 13, almost 14, that she perhaps really didn't need a babysitter during the day. And so he didn't feel like that even though she was in the home with the defendant at that point, there was the same sort of custodial relationship where the defendant would have really been responsible for her. And so for that reason, the defendant was acquitted of those two charges. But the court found that the evidence supported the third charge simply because it occurred at night, 10, 11 o'clock, and given the relationship between the child, her age at that time, no other adults in the home, the defendant was responsible for the child at that time. And so for that reason, we would ask that you affirm because the evidence certainly was sufficient to support the trial court's finding of guilt.
Thank you very much. Rebuttal, Mr. Merriman?
Very briefly, Your Honor, I think it's been summed up well. Looking at the cases which I have done, each of the cases, common string that holds them together is some sort of relationship between the victim and the victim's assailant, the defendant or appellant. In this case, this child was not left with John Taylor. This child was left with China, who was John Taylor's fiance. Was never any discussion, not that there needs to be, it is clear, doesn't need to be some sort of formal arrangement made, but in this case, it just didn't happen. What did happen was it ended up being the default caregiver because he was there and everybody else left on each of the occasions that these offenses allegedly occurred. I'd ask the court to look at the key question, especially what was introduced in Crampton, which is whether the defendant had the responsibility for and the control of the child's safety and well-being. Does being over 18 and the last one standing with the children in the house by default put you in that position? That's where we are in this case. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you very much. We will come down and greet counsel.